All right, make sure you're in fellowship as we wind up here the oracle given to Issachar. It looks to be a peoples that lack really any ambition in life, of priorities, generally common to establishment orientation, militarily, economically, interested mostly in their own self-gratification. They look at their physical attributes of strength, power, things of this nature, to get them by in life. And they end up becoming enslaved as a people. Again, as I mentioned, first class, this is not reference to the Egyptian slavery over all of Israel at the end time under the Pharaoh who knew not Joseph, but looks at consequences of those who do not keep the priorities in life before them, to be intellectually stimulating, thinking individuals, just go around life, la-di-da, nothing else is going to happen, rose-colored glasses, you know, whatever. And they become dependent upon others to take care of things, and the next thing they find themselves in this enslavement that is pictured. Now, point 46 here to wrap this up. There were exceptions from this tribe, contrary to the picture now painted. The oracle is a generalization of the tribe corporately that would occur. 47, Judge Deborah is assumed from this tribe. So with Judge Tolob, a period of the judges, going into the land and conquest of the land by the conquest generation. 1404 B.C. and following. Rather than a government of monarchy or other form of government, God established certain judges to execute justice in regards to the Hebrews in the land. And they were brought in because of the spiritual malfeasance that the Israelites quickly went into after getting into the land and disobedience to God and getting in trouble before God under national discipline. And the judges were given to them as deliverers to prioritize for them. And out of that, there is one female judge, Deborah, that is mentioned to us. She's mentioned in Judges, Judges, the book of Judges, referring to this period of time in Israel's history. 515. And the princes of Issachar were with Deborah, so it's assumed by the interpreters that Deborah was from this tribe. As Issachar, so was Barak. Into the valley they rushed into the hills, men and visions of Reuben. There were great resolves of heart. Then one Judge Tola is mentioned in Judges 10:1, without going into any of the details here. Now after Abimelech died, Tola the son of Pua, the son of Dodo, a man of Issachar, rose to save Israel. He became a judge. And he lived in Shamir in the hill country of Ephraim. So 48, now under David, the tribe had gained a reputation for wisdom. A fact re-emerging in the Talmudic statement, the Talmud historical ledger, if you will, writings of the Jewish race. That the wisest members of the Sanhedrin, the governing body, over Israel at the time of Christ came from Issachar. The governing body was in two parts, the Sadducees and the Pharisees. The Sanhedrin were the top governing officials among those two sects. 1 Chronicles 12:32. Said of Issachar, men who understood the times with knowledge of what Israel should do, their chiefs were 200, and all their kinsmen were at their command. So, in the midst of their history, there were some high points. Otherwise, shakes him off. Thank you. Anybody got their 410 with them? So what is the reader to make of this oracle? My question that I ask myself. 50, it appears as a character reference for the tribe corporately. As an egocentric people, not offering any real substance of profession designed to support the nation as a whole. They lacked in contribution economically, militarily, things of this nature. Anybody with any prayer power, tell God to get rid of the bird. He controls their brain computers. Aha. See, prayer works. Thank you, Dan. So, 51, they lagged in contribution and ultimately found themselves at the mercy of others for continued support. Fifty-two, they adhered to pride in their physical abilities and would rather let others own them than to show ambition, assuming responsibilities necessary to maintain independence. Fifty-three, they traded their freedom for security, self-gratification, and complacency of life. That sounds like another nation I know of. Anyway. 54, the economic contribution of Zebulun quite overshadows that of his older brother Issachar. Zebulun provided, if you will, financial and economic substance to the nation as a whole in their endeavors. Issachar simply acquiesced to the control of others and became menial slaves in that respect. 55, the oracle teaches on the pitfall of apathy and solely relying on physical assets in life. To have certain assets, certain talents, things of this nature, is great. There's nothing wrong with that. But to divorce yourself from God and your plan and maintaining your priorities, etc. in life, otherwise can find yourself in a hole, a deep hole of loss of freedom. 56, the tribe is listed in the 144,000 count of Revelation 7:7. So these are not unbelievers we're dealing with. We're dealing with believers with their own SCA issues and problems in life. You go from one industrious tribe to tribe of nothing but servant. All right, verses 16 through 18. This blessing addresses Dan and the tribe of Dan. Now, looking at the Hebrew here, verse 16. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Speaking of judges, now we come to the tribe of Dan in this capacity. So you had the proper noun, Dan, which Don, Dan, followed with the cal perfect third masculine singular verb, Dean. So Dan is a play on the word Dean, which means he will judge or contend for. Here, his people. A people is your common masculine singular struck noun with the third masculine singular suffix am. D-I-Y-N. And then am, A-M. As one of the tribes of Israel, preposition kaf, as. Simple Hebrew letter, looks like a backward C. One of is the adjective masculine singular struct, ekar, E-C-H-A-R. Tribes is the common masculine plural construct, sheveth, S-H-B-E-T-H. Rod of, extension, tribe of. It was used in verse 10 for staff there. To verse 28, 12 tribes of Israel, the term is used. This word is used. Shebeth, Israel, proper noun. Verse 17. In addition to that, that's the good point. That's the high point for Dan. Now, we have a censure brought upon Dan. Verse 17, Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a horned snake in the path. All right. First, you have the cow, perfect third masculine singular with jussing force, Hayah, the oracle, let him become, prophetically anticipating the result here. Proper noun, Dan. And first, a serpent in the way. You have the common masculine singular noun, Hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. Then, common masculine singular noun, absolute here, our word serpent, Nakash, N-A-C-H-A-S-H. Same as the serpent in the garden, to chapter 3, verses 1, 2, 4, 13, and 14. Here, in the way or upon the way, you have the preposition all, A-L, followed with our noun for way. Here is a common both singular absolute noun, Derek, D-E-R-E-K. A horned snake in the path. Horned snake or viper is a common masculine singular noun absolute, Shephiphon. S-H-E-P-H-I-Y-P-H-O-N. It's a hawpox. It's only used here in the Bible. Here, in the path, as it's translated, you have the preposition all repeated, A-L. Then our noun translated path is common both singular absolute, Orach. O-R-A-C-H. A path or highway. It highlights the manner of road, a manner of road, the type of road, if you will. We'll deal with the the two terms in our notes. This serpent, horned snake, goes on that bites the horse's heels in the translation so that his rider falls backward. First you have the definite article with the cow participle, masculine singular verb, nashad, N-A-S-H-D, literally the one biting, followed with our noun for heels in the construct, common masculine plural, akev, A-Q-E-V, the heels of. Here, a horse is your noun, common masculine singular absolute, sus. And then you have the wow consecutive, followed with the verb cow and perfect third masculine singular, nafal, N-A-P-H-A-L. As the English here translates, a situation that does occur so that he fell. However, there is an alternate translation that can be recognized so he might fall. The imperfect can be used as a subjunctive in the Hebrew. So you got two things to look at here in rendering your interpretation. So he might fall or he fell. As one may go with this, we'll deal with it. The one falling is rider, the one riding it. That's again another participle, cow participle, masculine singular struct with the third masculine singular suffix, rakab, is rider, R-A-K-A-B. And the falling is behind or backwards, is a common masculine singular absolute, akor, A-C-H-O-R. In verse 18, we have this assertion made by Jacob. For your deliverance or salvation, I wait, O Lord. Preposition lamed, our noun for deliverance or salvation, this common feminine singular construct, the second masculine singular suffix is the Hebrew Yeshua, where we get Yeshua, Savior, in the English, Y-E-S-H-U. Here, simply your deliverance. I wait or hope for is the P-L, which is emphatic, utterly wait for, ultimately with complete expectation of the reality occurring, is the P-L, perfect first common singular, Kawa, Q-A-W-A-H. And then our proper noun for Lord is, as we have seen throughout, is Yahweh, Y-A-H-Y-E-H. Yahweh is a transliteration of the Hebrew. Yeshua, as a lot of the King James types and fundies might argue with you that there's no Yahweh, they call him Yeshua. That's simply a translation. Yahweh is a transliteration. An exact rendering of the Hebrew letters and vowel point as they would be in the word. All right, rereading here are three verses 16 through 18. Dan will judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Verse 17, Dan shall be a serpent in the way, a horned snake in the path, that bites the horse's heels so that his rider falls or might fall backward. Verse 18, for your deliverance or salvation, I wait, O Lord. Now, since verses 16 through 18, 1. Dan was the eldest son of Bilhah, Rachel's maid, and the fifth son of Jacob. His birth is recorded for us, Genesis 30, 1 through 6. The divorce of Jacob's children during this period of time occurred. All 11 plus the sister Dinah, he had 12 altogether, occurred within a 7-year span. Now, he had 4 wives that he was working with on this. We refer to this process as the baby wars. The two sisters, Rachel and Leah, became highly competitive. One, Leah, because she desired the affection of Jacob that he refused to give her. And he turned his attention to the looker of the two sisters, the one who was his physically favored, Rachel. Rachel became competitive because God shut her womb and she was unable to bear children at the onset in regards to their marriage, which, as we know, Jacob ended up marrying both of them. He was deceived in regards to marrying Leah, as on his honeymoon night, in the cover of darkness, his uncle Laban replaced Rachel, whom he was supposed to marry, with her sister Leah. And that, after breaking his word of contract for the 7 years labor that Jacob obviously engaged in for her hand. Wow, what an eye-opener on that one. Work 7 years to your best to acquire a specific thing. You pick whatever you want to be, and you get there, somebody trades you with a substandard model in your eyes. See, all this, you got to realize, believers have to grow up. Jacob had to grow up spiritually, and he was engaged under energy of the flesh for Rachel. And then his uncle Laban, as we know, turned around and said, this is just customary in our circles, all the BS that he's throwing at him in this regards. Work for me for another 7 years, and you go ahead and marry Rachel, and we'll call a good deal a bargain. So he agreed to that. So 14 years, he worked for one woman, and it cost him twice his time and effort that the energy of the flesh otherwise sponsored and pursued. If he had just faith rested, God would have brought all this about for him. But you know the flesh. The flesh has to have it now. You know. But anyway. And in that period of time, Leah, I'll get him right, starts cranking out kids, 4 of them immediately, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Rachel gets all upset about this because she can't have any kids. And she takes her maid, which her uncle Laban obviously was well off because she had her own maid as well as Leah, and tell Jacob, after she tried to chastise him for not having kids, and of course he blew his top back at her like it's his fault. He's cranking them out right and left with Leah. That's the STA for you, see. Always finding somebody else to blame your problems on, rather than looking at your own life, your own STA, and your own malfunction spiritually. But anyway, and she gives him Bilhah, his maid, as a concubine, which in the legitimate circles, in God's eyes, by taking her sexually, it is a contract of marriage with her. And from her came the first son here that we're dealing with, Dan. Each of the concubines had 2 sons apiece. Rachel had 2 sons. Leah had all the rest, including the sister Dinah. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, She became jealous of her sister. Genesis 31:31. And she said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. the emotional outburst of this female. Like her whole life is dependent upon Jacob's ability to conceive on her behalf. And two, then Jacob's anger burned against Rachel. And that's righteous indignation, by the way. To be accused in regards to something that one has no control over, etc. She slipped out. And he steps in and he strongly chastises her. And he said, am I in the place of God? First and foremost, a doctrine. At least he brings in the doctrine. God's in control of even those women getting pregnant. Who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb. And she said, here's my maid Bilhah. Go into her. That's sexual intercourse. That she may bear on my knees. In place of Rachel is the idea. That through her, I too may have children. She would maintain, if you will, legal custodialship and right of name, if you will, over her servant, children in this vein. So she gave him, verse 4, her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her. Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, verse 6, God has vindicated me and has indeed heard my voice and has given me a son. Therefore, she named him Dan. Vindicated is literally contended for me on her behalf. And there shows a believer, Rachel is a believer, shows a believer that continues to rationalize things going on in life that she forces to put into perspective what she thinks God's plan is when it's not. But anyway, so we went through all that. Your SCA will force your own ideology on the plan of God, and you'll end up distorting it and misrepresenting it in regards to your witness of the life. And remember, we all have a witness of the life. We are all a representative of this body of Christ, too. You need to remember that when you're in the cosmos. And instead of acting like the idiot cosmos, act like an adjusted believer should act if you have a problem in that area. Two, continuing the significance of symbolism in the play on words for names, as we've already seen as example, i.e. Judah means praise. He shall receive the praise of his brothers. Zebulun, habitation. Dwelling, Issachar, one for hire. So we see now again with Dan. Three, the Hebrew Dain, Dan, is derived from the following Hebrew verb, Dean, D-I-Y-N. D-A-Y-N, Dan, D-I-Y-N, Dean. In the following phrase, shall judge his people, Dean Am. So for Dan's progeny, he is destined to exercise some position of leadership over his people, yet short of a monarchy as with Judah. From Judah's line will come kings. Dan's line will produce those that otherwise have a authority over the people, but a lesser authority than being a monarch. So five, now some commentaries view, quote, his people, that phrase, end quote, as simply relating to the tribe of Dan, just his own tribal descendants. 6, yet the following phrase, quote, as one of the tribes of Israel, Koth, Ekar, Sheveth, Israel, end quote, suggests a position over the nation as a whole, as one of the tribes of Israel. So 7, the adjective one singles Dan out among all other judges in this capacity. He's singled out in this position that will be held of contending, judging, if you will. 8, now the English, quote, tribes, end quote, is the Hebrew sheveth that means rod or staff, in quotes. And, as we noted, was translated scepter in verse 10 of Judah. The scepter shall not depart from Judah. Emphasizing his geographical rule over the nation. So 9, Sheveth emphasizes dominion and rule, further supporting an expansive position of leadership, not just over their particular tribe. And in Judges, the book of Judges, we'll see the same concept attached here to being a judge. So 10, now the prophecy in view. First looks forward to the period of the judges recorded in the Old Testament by the same name, as we just made reference to in previous class. 11, that judges during this period had national jurisdiction is seen in such verses as Judges 4, 4, and 5. There, reference to Deborah. Now, Deborah, a prophetess, she's had the gift of prophecy. The wife of Lapidoth was judging Israel at the time, looking at jurisdiction over the entire nation. And she used to sit under the palm tree, verse 5 of Deborah, between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the sons of Israel came up to her for judgment, as she would discern, critique situations, circumstances, and pass judgment in regards to decisions, in regards to the situations at hand. So that verse documents an extension of national jurisdiction. They weren't just simply limited to their own tribes. So 12, Samson, another well-known biblical figure among most Christians. Samson was a descendant of Dan during the period of the judges. Exegetes comprehensively look to Samson as fulfillment of this prophecy. In other words, they make him the main character that in totality fulfills this prophecy, including the descriptive characterization of being a serpent and a horned snake, etc. That all that's fulfilled through his person. Samson, as we know, or maybe don't, he was determined by God to take the Nazarite vow. There's a difference between Nazarite and Nazarene. Nazarene is the reference to one who comes from Nazareth, as Jesus did. Nazarite was a particular vow that God placed upon certain people, certain Jews. In representation of the Israel being in a state of rebellion, they were to grow long hair. They were not to cut their hair. Long hair in a male is an overt sign of rebellion. They were to refrain from alcoholic beverages. All these were representation of Israel being in reversionism, national reversionism. And they were symbolic of that with their commission to proclaim to Israel their spiritual fallacy. John the Baptist, another example of the Nazarite vow. Samson, under his vow and his niche, people think they're strong today. This guy is probably the strongest guy that's ever walked on this planet. God endowed him with supernatural strength, strictly in the human form. And as we know, he was a womanizer. The guy's positive. He's got his weaknesses. The Philistines was his main enemy. And they're constantly trying to trick him into getting killed. One Delilah, who he fell for, hook, line, and sinker, finally deceived him and tricked him into telling her his secret of his strength. And everybody thinks his strength is in his hair. No, his strength was in his commitment and loyalty to Bible doctrine and representation to it. Cutting his hair was an overt sign of his rebellion to that commitment. See, everybody wants to always place the emphasis on the physical. And to cut his hair. And sure enough, he woke up after he had toyed with her a couple times. Tell the guy was quite the jokester. And finally, he lets it slip out. And Philistines come in. And they capture him. He lost his strength. God came back on him with individual discipline. Removed the spirit, giving him strength in that regard. They blinded him. And they put him to work, turning him basically a mill. Working, and but he went in a state of reversionism temporarily during that time, but by the end of his life he came out of reversionism. As we know, as they made sport of him, as the story goes, he was in the Colosseum with a roof on it, and he had a slave placing between two pillars, and God restored his strength as evidence of reversion recovery, and he glorified God by breaking down the pillars, and the roof came falling down, and thousands of people died that very day. So he glorified God, killing people on his way out of life. Put that in your Sunday school lessons and make it clear. So that's an overview of Samson. And obviously with the kind of charades and other activities that went on, one might see where one would look at that and try to implement that in. But we'll deal with this. So 14, now that Dan is singled out from other judges, recognizes that judges also came from various tribes, not limited to Dan. We saw Deborah from Issachar and Tobah, that judge. Another example is Benjamin. A judge came from the tribe of Benjamin, Judges 3:15. When the sons of Israel cried to the Lord. It's this way it is. Believers get out of whack spiritually, out of step spiritually, dig themselves holes under their STAs, and God starts raining divine discipline on them. And for the spiritually positive is a benefit, because then it's a wake-up call. And they'll start turning back to God. That's kind of a phenomenon that you see in the Christian life. That when believers are under severe testing, whether it be a divine discipline or legitimate testing, positive believers tend to shine. But when things are going good, and everything is laid back. Issachar. People get lazy spiritually and lax, and they don't do so good spiritually. How many times I've watched people come to our Bible classes over the years that went under really hard types of tests and just shine spiritually, then God started blessing them after the fact, as He often does with testing, with comes a blessing and vice versa. And the next thing you see them just blip on out. You go, how sad is that? Ephraim, another example, Judges 4, 4 and 5. Hill country of Ephraim, as she reigned there, however, as we noted earlier, she is considered to be part of the Issachar's tribe bloodline. But Ephraim had judges. Got to double check that reference. Either way, we've proved our point in documenting that other tribes had judges. All right. 15. That period historically followed the conquest of the land of Canaan and the death of Joshua. Picking up with Judges 2, 8 and following. Joshua, the son of Nun, verse 8, one of the survivors of the Exodus. Joshua and Caleb. I erroneously mentioned Aaron. He died before the conquest, by the way. The servant of the Lord died at the age of 110. He buried in the territory of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres in the hill country of Ephraim, north of Mount Gaash. 10 and all that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and they rose another generation after them, did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which He had done for Israel. That following the conquest generation. Then you have another generation of believers that come in that while the conquest epitomized positive volition phase two on their part, and then in the next generation, you don't know what will end up, what will come out of every generation, basically. And they start, they got their land, the land of milk and honey. Everything's going good for them, just as I mentioned. And what did they do? Verse 11, then the sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals, the god fertilities and things of that nature. And they forsook the Lord. They abandoned Bible doctrine. When you forsake God, to forsake God is abandon Bible doctrine and His directed will for your life. And all that begins with your NPR, by the way. Hebrews 10:25. That has not changed in all the centuries that the Bible has been written. Hebrews 10:25 has never changed. For people that want to rationalize that. And they forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them. They end up not applying the doctrine of separation appropriately in regards to the pagan counterparts, unbelieving counterparts, and it costs them spiritually. The principle is, while the human viewpoint says, well, I can bring these people up. I can help build them up in regards to their spiritual life. The principle is bad drags down good eventually. You hang out with them long enough, you'll find yourselves falling into their ways. And the negative influence comes in through their human viewpoint. Areas they pick up that you're weakened in regards to your own life spiritually, and they feed off of that because they don't have the same interests, obviously, of seeking the entire counsel that maybe you do. And bow themselves, finish that verse, down to them, thus they provoke the Lord to anger. That's righteous indignation. Righteous indignation. So, 16, Israel during that period became rebellious towards God, and judges were given to them for their deliverance. That's verse 16 of Judges 2. Then the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. Hence, bringing into the context the background of the book of Judges. Yet, Israel perpetuated their religious reversionism, and God withheld their continuing conquest of the land to test their volition towards doctrine. You want to pursue the world. You may just be shortchanging yourself in regards to blessings that God otherwise has intended for you. And so it was in regards to Israel in the conquest. They have yet in their history to acquire and possess all the real estate that was promised to them under the Abrahamic covenant. And this comes about due to their spiritual malfeasance in history and not maintaining their spiritual integrity long enough to be blessed to that capacity. So that is what happens to Israel. And part of the test that comes into the tests that do come into our life is designed to test our volition, to test whether or not we're going to choose for or against God. Are we going to capitulate to the sin nature, to human viewpoint rationalization, or are we going to commit ourselves to Bible doctrine? See, and go with that and make that our choice in regards to our tests. And tests are generally a mixture of failure and success for even those who are positive and adjusted. But testing is necessary. Otherwise, we wouldn't know where we're at spiritually. You can rely on your own self-critique and your mental attitude. Okay. In verse 21, God, in regards to His righteous indignation, part of national discipline, verse 21, I also will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left when he died, due to their national corporate religious reversionism that they dove into. 22, in order to test Israel by them, the proclamation of the truth of doctrine, the proclamator who gives the truth of doctrine, judging, contending, doctrine judges, it critiques our hearts, the intents of our very souls, see, is designed to test each and every one of us whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk in it as their fathers did or not. So the Lord allowed those nations to remain, not driving them out quickly, and He did not give them into the hand of Joshua. So they never reached the design benefit because they had their own avenue and path of pursuing their happiness in life rather than looking it to God. Father, again, thank You for the truth of Your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light us to these things. In Jesus' name, amen.